Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Marcia Sitkoski. I'm the co-chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Forum and your chair for this evening's program. We also welcome our listeners on the radio, podcast, and our streaming audio. It is my pleasure tonight to introduce our program called Ask the Experts, How Social Venture Capital is Changing the World. We'll be hearing from a panel of three experts. The first will be Joel Solomon. He's going to lead our panel as the moderator, and he's the chair of the Renewal 2 Investment Fund. Along with Joel, we'll be hearing from Tim Freundlich of Good Capital, and then Josh Becker of New Cycle Capital. All three are committed to using patient capital to further develop the new emerging social capital market, and we'll certainly be hearing more about that, as well as practical advice on how to attract and deploy capital assets for our common good. Very briefly, I'd like to give introductions of our three panelists, starting with Joel. Joel Solomon, as I said, is the chair of Renewal 2 and the president and CEO of Renewal. He was instrumental in the development of Renewal Partners and the Ends Well Foundation and has led both of them since their inception in 1994. His firm has invested in over 75 companies that share its commitment to socially responsible growth. Prior to founding Renewal, Joel spent 10 years building businesses in Nashville's decayed urban core, a variety of businesses, which I'm certainly sure he can talk more about. He's also a founding member of the Social Venture Network, the Business for Social Responsibility, and Tides Canada, where he's the board chair of the Tides Foundation in the U.S. And lastly, he sits on numerous other investee boards, including Happy Planet Foods and Strategic Communications. Tim Freundlich is the founding principal of Good Capital and is also the director. Director, Strategic Initiatives for Calvert Social Investment Foundation, which manages a range of products that bring together both the philanthropy and the social investment spaces. He recently launched the Calvert Giving Fund, the socially responsible donor-advised fund, and has helped to prototype Community Investment Partners, which is a group for community development and social enterprise investment. Lastly, Tim spends much of his time as an advisor to various nonprofits with a concentration in alternative media. He's a documentarian of social capital markets development using video, presentation, and writings. Lastly, we have Josh Becker, who's the general partner and co-founder of New Cycle Capital. He started his career in the clean energy space in 1991. From Williams College, he went to work for a D.C.-based environmental consulting firm, and he helped to launch the first Clean Air Marketplace Conference in 1992. He's also worked on Capitol Hill as press secretary for a congresswoman on the Energy and Commerce Committee before starting several internet companies. He then moved on to receive joint degrees from Stanford Graduate School of Business and the Stanford Law School before joining the Brentwood Venture Capital firm. Lastly, Mr. Becker is an advisor to Energy Unlimited, a pioneering wind energy company, and is the co-founder of the Freedom Prize Foundation, which will soon be giving away $5 million in prizes with the Department of Energy to encourage deployment of clean energy technologies. He was recently named as one of the top 40 under 40 people to watch in Silicon Valley by the San Jose Business Journal. So I go through that to further impress you with the quality of our panel this evening, and I hope you enjoy it. And with that, I'll turn it over to Joel Solomon. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia. Thanks, Commonwealth Club, and everybody that put this event together. And to each of you that came out here on taking your evening to spend some time learning about the important innovations in the use of capital to change the world. We're going to each do a little intro. Then we will speak among ourselves for you for a bit, and then we'll open up to questions. Skipping the whole part about the challenges of the world that you all are well versed in, we need a solutions economy. We have to convert both industrial and consumer products and services towards lighter footprint and taking more responsibility for planet and people. Not only that, but we have to hold close and remember that we are actually ancestors. On our watch, a lot of things are changing. And future generations are going to look back and wonder how we made the choices that we did and what we did and what we did when we were faced with challenges to turn that around. The key, that's the central guiding definition for me in the work that I do, and I think my colleagues here will have some other version that drives them to work on steering money towards societal goods. There is a movement blossoming in this realm. It's been going on. The early stage has been going on for many years. It's beginning to get traction with the economic realities of this past year. What were once considered the rock-solid financial instruments and methodologies are less rock-solid, and there is a huge growing demand, particularly in next generations, existing generations right now, younger people, but also many of us who want to see how we can align money and values and to have our money working in ways that makes the world that we want to live in. It's still early stage. We're still inventing what terms like social venture capital mean and what the right language is and how to define it. Hopefully, the work of the various pioneer and early stage entrepreneurs who are building funds to pool capital that can help other entrepreneurs grow the solutions for tomorrow will grow and boom like perhaps organic food has done after many years of hard work and being more fringe, and even today is still small in the larger economy of global food. Renewal 2 was born through 15 years of work with Renewal Partners. And Renewal Partners is a strategy based in Vancouver, British Columbia, using all different forms of money and the power of business to affect social change and long-term sustainability. The part of Renewal that is about investing in early-stage businesses and helping grow them is what Renewal 2 came out of. We look to find products and services, mostly in the consumer sectors, food, housing, shelter, green products, basic human needs, that have a chance to grow to scale and make money and create prosperity while also looking after people and planet. A couple of examples of that, just to make it more real, that you may have heard of is we've been an early investor in Stonyfield Farm Yogurt, which is transforming the yogurt industry in North America and now internationally. The founder, Gary Hirschberg, had a philosophy to attempt to change the corporate world is his direction. And after purchase by Danone, one of the large international food companies, is now taking those principles throughout the company and around the world. Seventh Generation is a business that creates all kinds of household products, from toilet paper to tissues to baby diapers, that are done with less toxics and cleaner. And Seventh Generation has grown to well over $100 million in sales now and is on its way to much bigger things. Happy Planet, you may not know of unless you're Canadian, but that is a organic smoothie and juice company that is a favorite brand in Canada. Interesting part about that story is that entrepreneur, after going through 15 years of business and building that out, decided to get in politics and recently was elected mayor of Vancouver just after the U.S. presidential elections on a social and environmental sustainability program or agenda. And I believe that you'll hear more about him over time, but today, as an example of this field and where it can go, is at the business, it's called the Board of Trade in Vancouver. He launched a new brand for Vancouver and a new economic development plan calling Vancouver Green Capital, an attempt to be one of the greenest cities in the world, which is really just a way to stimulate everyone to try to be the greenest city in the world. But the point is there is money to be made in efficiency and in cleaner products that look after community better. Long-term sustainability, food, shelter, healthy living, with smart environmental priorities and positive community impact, creating jobs and economic prosperity. That's the work of Renewal 2. For more information, renewal2.ca or renewalpartners.com for our larger work. We love this work, all of us in the field. It's inspiring and it's hopeful. I hope that each of you that are listening here in the audience, and should we be broadcast, are thinking about your money and how it impacts the future. What's your money doing while you're sleeping at night? Think about that and look for the ways, whether you're a consumer, you're an investor, whatever you do, and take the responsibility to see where your money is going and at least think about it and learn about it. Those are my starting comments, and now I'm going to turn to my first delightful colleague, Josh, and see what you have to say.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Joel. I thought that was a very inspiring overview, and really appreciate that. I'll talk a little bit about my story, and then we'll figure out what else folks want to talk about at Q&A. Started out as we talked about, actually had worked in sort of energy environment for about 4 years, and then got into technology in 1994 when the congresswoman I was working for lost in 1994 in a takeover of the House of Representatives. And she lost, and ended up starting an internet company, and spent the next 10 years doing tech entrepreneurship. And it was great. I joined a firm called Brentwood Venture Capital, and ultimately we started a new firm called Redpoint Ventures, which is one of the top Silicon Valley firms. And that was a great experience, went on to do other tech entrepreneurship. And then a guy that I'd known for a while who was with another fund called me about a deal, which was an inner city retailer. And he was at a fund at the time that did do consumer investing, where not a lot of folks actually do tend to focus on that, but his firm did. But they folks at his firm couldn't get over the hump on this company. And it was a company that went into some of the poorest neighborhoods around Philadelphia and created these stores that really became hubs of the community. And it's called The Villa, and they started something called The Villa University, where they taught life skills and work skills to the kids. And sort of the transformative moment for this guy was when he went into to speak in front of all the employees and gave them their stock options. And first he had to explain to them what a stock option was. They got it, though. They got it, and they got the fact that they were going to be owners now of this enterprise. And so the whole experience was very transformative for him. And so he called me up at a time and said, hey, this guy really needs to raise some money. He had bootstrapped it up to a number of stores, which is very hard to do in retail. But they did need to raise more money. So he called me, and we went out and raised money for them. We just had to do it just on the phone with friends. So we said, hey, this is a good deal, but it's also going to be a fun project. And so we were able to raise $6 million for the company. Once we did that and we were able to help build a team around the entrepreneur, then we were able to take it to other people in venture capital that do more traditional later stage. And they said, oh, okay, now we get it. We get there's, this now looks like a deal that we're familiar with. And we were able to raise a deal at multiples of where we had invested. And it just was a really fun experience. And we said, hey, how can we do more of that? And so this guy, Ben Black, and becoming my partner, and we started New Cycle Capital. And New Cycle, we started really with that intention, refers back to a lot of things that Joel talked about, but we want to invest in things that we thought could be great businesses but did some kind of social good. And the way we decided to approach it is we said, great, let's focus on areas of the economy where we think that, by definition, if we create great companies, we'll be doing social good. And so the two areas we focused on is one we call the extended green economy. We call it extended green economy because it's more than just, a biofuels or a tech investment. But really, we looked at things that are really going to be playing into the larger trend of a move to a new energy economy. And then what we call the domestic emerging markets that kind of came out of this Villa, right? Which is looking at more inner cities and ethnic entrepreneurs and sort of fair financial services and those kind of investments. So we went out and raised a fund, and we can talk more about that later. It's hard to raise a fund in a new category. It's hard to raise a first-time fund in general, and it's extremely hard to raise one in a new category, something that looks different. But we were able to put together enough money to go out and do it, and we've got about six companies in the fund. We're actually just closing on a couple new ones. I saw Scott Crawford here, who's the CEO of Goldspring, which is one of our investments, which is really an online platform to help people get out of credit card debt. We call it like a Weight Watchers for credit card debt, focused on the financial services theme. And another company, which is a Latino media company called Saber Es Poder, which is about turning waiting rooms into learning rooms. So among other things, they have the exclusive rights to do media in all the Mexican consulates. And so it's about reaching this population and bringing them media that's educational, but also helps them live out the American dream. And then in the energy world, do things like Positive Energy, which is basically taking over the utility bill, and it compares people to their neighbors. So it helps fill the information void. And we've proven that just by doing that, via we present it in the right way via the utility bill, we can get people to reduce their energy use fairly significantly. So those are the kinds of investments we've been focused on. It's been a great ride, and happy to talk more about whatever folks want to talk about later.
Hi, Tim Freundlich here. I think those are great setups for me. I don't have to go into the personal trajectory of how I got into doing what I'm doing, but basically we came together at Good Capital a couple of years ago, specifically around a slightly different frame set, although very complementary, and it's, I think, complementary to the extent that we all know each other and have worked across a lot of collaborative platforms and deals, and some more than others. But we kind of looked around and realized that there's some major convergence and breaking down of silos that's going on in the world. And what I mean by that is that entrepreneurs and enterprise, that's distinct from each other, are beginning to really break down the boundaries or the barriers between what is effectively, I think, the stomping ground of nonprofits and do-gooders, if you will, and the stomping ground of enterprise and business and scalability and commercialness. And in particular, I think the breakdown between literally corporate structures around nonprofits and for-profits and what kinds of people were working and drawn towards one or the other. And all you need to do is look at probably every single one of the top 20 business schools in the United States right now and see the attention that they are putting into corporate social responsibility, social enterprise, social venture competitions. You'd be very hard-pressed to find one. And in fact, it's almost like a Me Too thing. You have to have it to compete for your candidates for MBAs. And people really are ready to start blending the values, as Jed Emerson would say, who used to be at Stanford and Harvard, blending the value between kind of mission and purpose and financial outcomes and businesses. So, fast forward or back up to which, depending on which direction you're coming from, 2 years ago, Good Capital was formed specifically to demonstrate that there is a hybrid sort of enterprise coming online and a hybrid sort of entrepreneur that is really proliferating across the world, not just the United States or Canada for that matter. And I guess a great way to get into the guts of what we do is to look specifically at the first investment that we made about 15 months ago for this new fund, and that was in Better World Books. Better World Books is a company that grew out of a bunch of frustration at the Notre Dame campus and three graduates not that long ago, 2002, they really started, and they realized that college campus bookstores were taking books, used books back and paying nothing for them and then selling them for a lot, and that there was some sort of something to be done about this. And so they basically figured out that if they partnered with nonprofit literacy partners, they could activate the student bodies at Notre Dame first, and then throughout the United States later, to essentially give their books in support of literacy programs and helping people around the world feel great about it, and then they could sell them online to people and make a really high margin because they had no cost of goods, at least none in terms of the hard cost of goods. They obviously had to acquire and partner with student groups and set up the lemonade stands, if you will, for books. And they are now on 1,400 college campuses. They are doing $35 million in sales and have 200 people who are employed in Mishawaka, Indiana alone, mostly low-income populations with full health benefits. They're doing carbon offset for all of their shipping, so they're carbon neutral, and they're saving something like 20 tons of books a month from landfills. They've extended the model to a few other things, and they're in the UK now with Oxfam. And but basically, what was really interesting about that, from our point of view when we looked at it, was that this was a business that would exist, that would not exist, but for this kind of frustration with something that wasn't working, and an attachment to a mission around solving literacy. So the proceeds of much of this. These books were actually being channeled to sub-Saharan Africa to build libraries. They were sending books to stock those libraries, and these kids, they were kids then. They've grown up quite a bit in the last 6 or 7 years. Actually built a really scalable, amazing business that was completely composed around a social purpose. That doesn't mean that they have not applied great entrepreneurial skill. I mean, you don't build a $35 million company with 200 employees without being a pretty darn good entrepreneur. But that's the kind of story and the kind of scale that's cropping up all over the world. And some of them are more motivated by commercial success, and we were talking about this before the panel started with some folks, you know, and some of them are less. But what we set about to really explore was what is highly engaged capital at a decent scale bring to the table, and how can it partner with these entrepreneurs to create pretty radical kind of iconic success that we hopefully will see move the next generations of entrepreneurs and investors and society to more fully integrate kind of values around the market system that we all live in. And I mean, one thing that we did with that I think is also tells the story about how this is different than just a green clean tech business or something, is that the first thing that we did was say, wow, there's a bunch of stakeholders around this table, and it's not just these three entrepreneurs from Notre Dame and us with our $2 million that we put into that deal, but there are these nonprofit literacy partners, and we're talking about Books for Africa and Room to Read, among others, some local groups there, and they are participating in the creation of this value. And how can we bring them into this system in a more meaningful way, other than just essentially providing some of the motivation for these students to give these books, which was, you know, a good business case, and they were getting the revenue. And so what we did was create a class of stock that those nonprofits are actually vesting into as part of their participation in the stakeholder system, not the shareholder system, the stakeholder system. And it has two tracks. It has one track, which has to do with how they drive book acquisition and brand and scale for the business, and another with how they deliver literacy programs in the developing world. So they are literally vesting into ownership in this company within the stakeholder system based upon their performance on their social metrics and their, you know, both internal and external. And I think that a lot of what we see, and I'm sure that we have some commonality up here, is that at some fundamental level, in addition to moving, in my case, I was, you know, alluding to this shareholder to stakeholder kind of thinking, there's also a very big thing to be done in the world along the lines of what Joel was alluding to around what's internalized versus what's externalized. And I believe feel in terms of the stakeholders that I represent and the company that I represent, that externalization of costs onto society and that have been going on, and I think that the kind of market meltdowns that we see happen partly because of this, has got to stop, and it's going to stop, and it is stopping, and people are waking up to the fact that you can't just put off the environmental cost onto the tax base in the nonprofit sector. You can't just put off the rehabilitation of equity and income in low-income communities onto the nonprofit sector and the public sector, and because we all end up paying for it anyway in our taxes, right, and our volunteer hours and everything else. So this is, I think, more than anything else, a reintegration of value that we're talking about here in different ways, and we come at it with different sectors and somewhat different words and profiles. But that's kind of the end point I'd like to in the intro.
So I hope you can start to get a flavor for why we have such a good time, because we get to see some of the brightest and best and most hope and inspiring kinds of entrepreneurs and projects coming online. And it takes a humongous amount of work by these entrepreneurs. And this is a business where you put in long hours to help grow companies and help put together the funds and all that's involved. But it's very rewarding. I hope that we've given a pretty good little sketch of the overview of why social venture investing and what it's about. And you've gotten a few stories just to give a flavor of what they are. We could each go on and talk about more companies and projects that we're familiar with. And we'll see if you ask some questions, what you want to ask questions about. But right now, I want to try and see if we can get a little dialogue going around this. Where does this kind of investing fit in the field, and how fast is it moving? How is there going to be a rapid transformation of how money is used? Is it going to be in our lifetime? Where's it going? What do you guys think?
You start.
I mean, I think that the motion is moving. It was sort of like, you watch the iceberg melt and or move or whatever. And I feel I've been doing this for 12 years now in one shape or another with Calvert and now GoodCap and Calvert Foundation in particular. And 5 years, 6 years ago, it really felt like looking at an iceberg. For whether it's the dripping or the moving, and I'm not sure which metaphor I'm trapped in. And it's definitely an iceberg, that's all I got to say. But now I think in the last couple of years there seems to be a noticeable acceleration. I do believe, as you, Joel, alluded to, that the last 12 months has provided a context for people who were already sort of nibbling around the edges of behavior change, whether it's an investor or an entrepreneur, to take a plunge that maybe they wouldn't have done because some of the conventional wisdom and the foundations that they were standing upon have been shaken just enough. And I believe that will be resonant for a period of time. We'll see how things go. It could be a long period of time. It could be relatively short. So I do think that there's movement in terms of the numbers. I mean, the Social Investment Forum at socialinvest.org is a good place to go for general, as a website address, general stats on the emergence of different kinds of social investing numbers. I mean, there's about 10% of total assets in the investment market in the United States that have some sort of ethic around this. I mean, they're not venture capital. Very little of it is venture capital. So
might be no tobacco, no
alcohol. Yeah, it could be some screen of stock and bond funds. I mean, that's the vast majority. Or shareholder action around social and environmental issues is a big chunk of it. But, $2.7 trillion, the last report they put out at the end of 2007, it's probably shrunk a little bit, is doing something like this. Now, of that, social venture capital and things is maybe, depending on how you define it, $500 million in the U.S. Clean tech has emerged and is adding some more billions every day to that, and sort of the green building is going to. I mean, but it's definitely moving.
Well, yeah, I'd say that if you look at things like the attendance at the SoCap conference and things you pointed to on business school campuses, things like that shows that there's people interested in this. My view is that you really need the whole ecosystem, and you need an ecosystem for this to flourish. And I think we saw that in the clean energy world, where you really at first took some of the big pension funds committing large amounts of money to the space, that then flowed down into the venture funds, that then created enough liquidity that there was, you know, that people then felt confident starting these businesses, and then it became a virtuous cycle. And I think that, you know, we need that in this area, and that there's still really too few of these funds. We need to feel the young smart people coming out of school need to feel like, okay, great, I can bet my career on this. And this business, because I know that if I hit certain metrics, that the money's going to be there, that the early stage money is going to be there, the mid stage money is going to be there, the late stage money is going to be there, and that ultimately there's an exit there if that's the form that I choose to take. And so I think that ecosystem is critical, and we're not quite there yet. But that's why every part of that, every piece of that ecosystem helps build the whole. And that's what we need, and I think we're starting to get there.
I'd like to just pause and remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to a program called Ask the Experts: How Social Venture Capital is Changing the World.
I love the ecosystem analogy, because in some ways, perhaps we're relearning how to mimic nature a little better. It really does take a diverse and complex system, not only on the investing side, but for the business community to understand the values of everything else in society, and for there to be strong institutions and organizations in all the different dimensions. And to a large degree, consumers are playing their role too by demanding it, asking their money managers, talking to their pension funds. I had another, maybe a provocative question. So climate change is kind of the trump card right now. Or it seems like it might be becoming where everybody goes, oh, we really do have to change some things. Clean tech, as you said, can be really about an industrial process. We could live in a clean technology and clean energy world that is missing beauty, social equity, all kinds of things. What do you think's needed as we move down the path towards cleaner, greener, more balanced, more jobs? How do we also have the parts of life that matter to us beyond money and jobs through this kind of investing? And what do you think about that?
Well, I guess I'll go first again. I do think that you used the term people and planet earlier, Joel, and that is, I think, gets at a lot of this, which is, although there's some natural intersections between clean technologies and environmentally based businesses and job creation, and that's one place where sort of the community economic development and people, that's code for people, community gets linked up with sort of a green play, and I do feel like we're beginning to break down a bit of the camps more and more, certainly in terms of the entrepreneurs and the investors that we're seeing, that they're able to sort of make those linkages. I don't think it's just that green is sort of at the vanguard of. I do think that it is the rocket ship at the moment in terms of, especially in this geo of California with the amount of activity going on. But if you look back to affordable housing development and how mature that is as a capital market play, and the 20-plus years of, Fannie and Freddie have all but ceased to certainly grow and lost a lot of their scale. But there are other ways. I mean, microfinance is a great example of something that has really caught, I think, the imagination of the world to some extent. And is starting to really bring sort of people and economics to the forefront of this kind of a conversation. And I thought it was also really interesting that Muhammad Yunus won the Nobel Peace Prize. Peace, not Nobel Economic Prize. Peace Prize, because people are starting to make the linkages between economic stability and safety and all that goes along with that. And I think that the more that we can link across the two lobes of people and planet, the more likely we're going to be finding a holistic expression of this in terms of what we're doing in the trenches.
And because I'm watching this, you can take that one on, or maybe where does it interface with politics and government? Is that something you'd like to take a shot at?
Interesting. Trying to blend those two questions. I mean, one I was going to say just on your clean tech question that for friend Sunil Paul, and so someone had said to him, "Hey, you know, clean tech folks, investors can make a lot of money, but actually even not make a dent even in climate change, right? Because I mean, the amount of solar you have to do to have an impact is really quite large." And so he creates something called the Gigaton Throwdown. So to actually look and see in different technologies, in different paths, whether it be buildings or solar, concentrators or whatever it might be, or wind or other things, what would it actually take to remove a gigaton of carbon from the atmosphere in those fields? And so I think I bring that up in the sense that because it sort of brings a sense of, I think what one of the things you were saying earlier, Tim, sort of intentionality. So when you sort of look at the investments, you're looking at, hey, how much of an impact can this have? And so I think that's kind of a good example of that.
Think politicians are going to lead or follow?
I think I hope they'll lead. We need politicians to lead. There's been very state activity around things like B Corps that actually was an area that policy can have an impact in development of companies that take into account more than just shareholders. That's been one interesting thing to look at. Certainly, policy plays a huge impact in the energy world. Anything touching on energy or energy efficiency or anything that you want to do.
Housing, food, all kinds of things.
Yes. Certainly as well. But we've certainly learned, and I think that's been really an education for the investing community as a whole that I've seen. I've been able to help lead that since I kind of came out of a policy background. But it's been really eye-opening to, I think, a lot of investors who, especially investors who really came out of pure technology where government just didn't matter at all. It's been eye-opening for them to realize, okay, government really matters in this. We need to get involved. Yep. And so it's been fun to do that, and I had a role in that. We started a group called Clean Tech for Obama that galvanized a lot of the clean energy community and green business community to support Obama, and we've kind of kept that going with something called the Clean Economy Network. So anyway, it's been fun to sort of see people realize that government and policy does play a role there.
Audience, what's on your minds? Got some questions? Oh, there's a mic that's going to come. You can show me your hands in advance if you.
Hi, I was just curious about your investors. Maybe you have limited partners or whoever they might be. What, talking about the ecosystem you were talking about earlier, what is that like? What's their incentive to continue to invest and, are the numbers there for them? Is it more of a, get brownie points from somebody else? Or, what's it like up there?
Yeah. Well, I'll start in the sense that I think, one thing that builds the ecosystem is success, right? So the more companies that we can talk about and say, hey, this was not only a great company, it was a great investment, and here's why, and here's the proof of that. That's what really ultimately helps build the ecosystem. It would be interesting to get perspectives. I think the LP community is evolving. I mean, so in terms of our investors, we did have a few people that invested out of foundations. So it was generally their family foundation. So it was generally someone who was themselves was an entrepreneur who was comfortable with taking risk, and they wanted to do more with their money. So they were investing out of their foundations. What we didn't get yet is a lot of the bigger foundations that are sort of saying, hey, we want to do more with our money. And that, that aspect, I think, of the field is developing. There's a lot of foundations who are talking about it, but a lot of them have not quite stepped forward in a big way. For us, it was really mixed. We had to put the deal together with some folks who were really motivated by the deals and some folks who knew us and just thought that we were going to make money. I think for us it was important we were able to tell both those stories because I think it is still evolving.
there's a lot of things that Josh said that that relate to our situation as well. Excuse me. We're in the middle. This is our first fund for outside investors. People have looked at our successful track record in the past, investing for one investor, and they also believe that the field is happening and that there is money to be made and there's change to impact. So of our we've raised $19 million from 37 different entities so far. Seven of those are charitable foundations. And then it's about a third among the others. Some who are just believers and they're going to do this. They want their money to be lined up with values and they're going to take risk. A third are very serious, successful entrepreneurs who have a sense that there's something coming, and they are putting a toe in the water. They're taking a look. They want to learn the field. They want to see the deals that we look at. They want to have access, and they want to help. They want to give back. And then there's a middle zone of people that are individuals or foundations who are very serious about their return rate and understand about managing their money and they're hands-on, and they want a piece of this for diversification and to be sure that they're somewhere that might have a big future to it.
The only thing I'd add is just that I think what increasingly we're starting to see is that there are folks who are, whether they be foundations or individuals, not saying this with institutional investors at all, but who really are starting to go all in with this kind of and stop having it be like an asset class. I mean, social venture capital, or it's not really an asset class. I mean, venture capital of a certain profile is the asset or sub-asset class. Socially responsible investing in stocks and bonds is not an asset class. It's a lens that you look through. So what we're starting to see is people take those glasses and stick them on their head and say, oh, now I see the whole world that way, and geez, it's going to be kind of difficult to figure out how to fully apply this. But when we're definitely seeing that at Calvert Giving Fund, which is a donor advised fund that people set up their foundations on, where 100% of their assets are going into this kind of stuff.
This is really important because those are going to be drivers of the field. And there's the ecosystem is happening enough that if you are determined to do it, there are credible products now for your stocks and your publicly traded things, your risk money, your charitable money that might be used for loans. And there's really a wide variety of products. There's not huge fields, but they're there if you're committed to it.
Sir.
Yeah, if you could stay with that theme a little bit more. Social capital, I noticed that there's some discussion going on what returns should investors actually expect. Is it the usual multiples, or what type of return, maybe not monetary, should investors expect, depending where they're coming from? What are you noticing in the return discussion?
Who wants first?
We're seeing a spectrum, so there isn't an answer that is singular. I mean, it's pretty plural as a space. There's we're putting together platforms of funds or looking at deals. I mean, we really have the ability to increasingly say, okay, well, there's a social or an environmental intervention here that's very exciting, that has a quote unquote market rate or a risk adjusted return, in which case it would track quite well to whatever its conventional peers would be, the things that look most like it in the real world. It's not going to be the unreal world much longer. But similarly, you are finding plenty of quite disciplined funds and quite disciplined entrepreneurs who are specifically trying to address a gap in the market system, and structurally, for very real pragmatic reasons around creating stability for the business and also social and environmental value, are stepping, I wouldn't say below market, I would call it non-market. It just doesn't correlate quite to the time frames and the sort of things that we tend to look at in the major indexes and benchmarks. So I don't think there's a really good answer. The fact is you can go all the way across that spectrum. Will the stuff that adheres to the commercial, the more conventional benchmarks, attract more capital more quickly and scale faster? Yes. Of course it will, because there's not as much headache in that for people in terms of the way they think about it.
just bigger risk. The spectrum is coming to life. It's getting populated more and more. And one thing I like to suggest thinking about here is that people talk about maximum rate of return on their financial investment. Their charitable money, they effectively earn a negative 100%. The money's gone. It does great things. Charity's very important. But there's somewhere in between negative 100 and maximum. There's a lot of space in between that. And this thing that Tim has said about non-market return is very interesting, because there was a moment back in the spring when we were earning, wasn't there a negative treasury rate return for a moment, and that still was, but you can do, there's unbelievable impacts that happen with each increment down the return scale money is willing to do on the front end. And then the flip side of that, there are new industries emerging that represent these sectors which can make a lot of money.
And I'll just add that in the venture capital, early stage companies are all about people. And then what we found in each one of our companies, we've been able to recruit, I think, better people than we would normally be able to get for that stage of company, because people were attracted by what the company was doing. And I think in that sense, these companies then can then have an unfair advantage and outperform in the market.
Not to mention that the attraction with whatever the consumer base is or the client base is, they may also be able to, I don't know if trade on is quite the right word, but to get a bit of a bump in terms of their attractiveness based on some differentiation of meaning, I think.
We certainly in the products and services that have a consumer-facing front, they are increasingly required to get more serious about this.
Hi, just keeping on the returns theme and looking forward, where are you folks looking, you know, without giving away any special sauce you might want to keep to yourselves. Where are you looking in the next couple of years to invest that you see as particularly high social and monetary returns? Where would entrepreneurs in the audience be well served to start building their companies?
We like fair trade. It's not so hot in the U.S. yet as it is in Europe and England in particular, and France. But the idea of a people differentiator in addition to a health differentiator, like organic, partly because something that starts out really small, when it really catches on, can go relatively many, many multiples of big, which gets to, you know, being able to scale things efficiently. So I think that's just off the top, something that we've really – we like the fact that it really brings – bridges the people and planet. But fair trade, for those who don't know, are the things like fair trade coffee most people are aware of, and even in the States. But it's funding worker cooperatives and really taking people out of poverty all over the world in the production of a lot of commodities and increasing non-commodities stuff.
Yeah, I'd say that in the extended green economy space, I think we're seeing a lot of interest around really new business models, things that are not necessarily technologies, but new business models. A company called Vergence, they have a site one block off the grid, which is really using social media to get people into prescription, you know, into group buying clubs for solar and energy efficiency, and then everyone gets a discount, they get a lead generation fee. It's really just a new business model. So I think that's, we're seeing some really interesting development there. And then I think in terms of our other sectors, we talked about the what we call the domestic emerging markets, we still feel there's a lot of opportunity there to serve emerging ethnic populations, to fund, you know, entrepreneurs there who don't have as much access to traditional sources of capital, and so they're scrappier, they're hungrier, they're building good businesses, and I think there's still a lot of room there.
I'll just leave it at, from my point of view, if it's thinking carefully about people, planet, and profit together, almost every field is going to have opportunities. Everything needs to get reinvented now.
So, perfect bridge to my question. I'm big fans of all yours, so I say this with all due respect. The investing world has traditionally been white and male. And I'm curious, now that we're doing things differently, do you see this changing at all with these new kinds of investments? Are there going to be other people than you on these panels in other days, or will... I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
I'm quiet.
Yeah.
But just for anybody who listens to a podcast or hears this, there's three mostly white males up here.
But I think in each one of our firms, we've had investing professionals that are not don't fit that category. So I think, you know, I think you will see that. I mean, I think it's, I don't know, it's hard. I mean, we, you know, you suffer sort of both ways. I mean, when we were going out to raise money, you know, we had one investor who, you know, our sort of anchor investors were really excited about. This was going to be like, you know, our slam. This was like a big moment for us, you know. And basically, you know, didn't believe that two white guys could do inner city investing. I mean, that was a belief. And so, you know, and, you know, even though we could point to other deals that we've done and successfully, but, you know, he just didn't believe that. I think you absolutely need more diverse professionals. They're going to be able to see different kinds of deals. I think that, you know, we shouldn't judge investors just by that as well.
Absolutely, yes. It's going to happen. There will be more and more diverse people coming up through finance. It's happening in business schools, and it's happening in the mainstream financial world. It's hard to think about in the social venture world yet. Very many examples that are very diverse.
Yeah.
Can you? There are some.
Well, at the entrepreneur level, I think
yes.
that there's definitely an over. I mean, compared to the conventional sectors, you're seeing more gender diversity, meaning women entrepreneurs, than in the same kind of class of company. But you know, and certainly our investor base is actually weighted much more to women, and probably, you know, I mean, I think that that's going to continue.
And there are targeted funds that in specific communities; those definitely exist.
So I just want to interrupt here. We have time for just one more question, and then we're going to have the panelists will each take a turn with their closing comments.
Hi. I'm curious to know if you've seen many nonprofits, especially those with products to sell, switching to a for-profit or for-profit-nonprofit hybrid model because of funding dollars drying up. I am actually a project of the Tide Center. Funding has been going way down for us, and so we've been looking at other models on how we can continue to do our work, and we have product to sell. And if so, have they been successful in getting any investors interested?
Yes, I think it's a lot easier to go that direction, I'll tell you, than to go the other direction, which has been done too. I mean, my friend Jim Fruchterman down at Benetech, which is a nonprofit incubator and multi-social enterprise kind of holding company, if you will, down in the Valley, they actually have spun out one of their businesses and sold it. And that was how they funded their nonprofit, and they sold it for quite a few million dollars to the private sector, as I remember the story. Microfinance as a whole industry is pretty amazing. The microfinance continues to have its roots in NGOs, in non-government organizations. The vast majority of early-stage microfinance groups globally are actually nonprofits that file and convert to regulated banking entities and for-profits and then begin to take equity. And it's exactly because once they prove the market and they sort of nurse themselves to a jumping-off point, they then are constrained by the absolute dysfunction of the nonprofit funding ecosystem, which is not just in the United States, it's pretty global. So I think it is a big problem, and it is hard to – I mean, we're trying to play around with that a bit at GoodCap in seeing are there ways that we can bring money at scale that is recoverable to nonprofits to fuel that growth. But it is very difficult to structure, and there's not the same way to you know, not the same ability to get returns.
There's more and more underway. I'm working both in Canada and the U.S. and watching what's going on somewhat in both countries. And so the imperative has come, and so innovation and creativity is happening, but it's early stage, and there are a few models, but it's going to be hard for many to get there. There's a growing field of practitioners and growing number of examples.
I'd say looking at our portfolio, Saber Espoder actually grew out of a nonprofit that was working with kind of the new immigrant community. So that's one example. I'm also a founder and board chair of Full Circle Fund, which is a fund a bunch of us put together, basically pooling together time and money of started out as young entrepreneurs and VCs and other folks in the community pulling together time and money to make really social investments, really mostly in nonprofits. But at a Full Circle Fund, we've worked with a couple organizations that are nonprofits that have worked on for-profit subsidiaries and things like that. So, I've some experience with it, but not that much.
It's a great audience. Got any final thoughts you want to leave them with?
I mean, I'd say that the theme of people and planet and the fact that we're starting to connect across those is definitely, in terms of sort of trend spotting and where things are going, a really important one from my vantage point. I think also to that last question, this nonprofit for-profit structure issue it's very much kind of out there right now, and you're starting to see people coming and going, like, what should we even be? And if we want to go to scale, what should we be? And I think that, the answer on that often is about human and financial capital. It's what kind of funds do you need to get where, and what kind of people do you need to incent to make it work? And the answer that's indicated is not for profit necessarily, but it often is, increasingly with the ones that have strong commercial enterprises, and I think there will be a lot of innovation over the coming years around how those two corporate structures, if you will get kind of stretched, and the B corporation idea, and there's an LC3 initiative on two, which is a limited profit, limited liability company that's coming online in a couple of states, and I think they're working on it coming online in California if it hasn't already. I think we're going to see a lot of push towards how do you provide entrepreneurs who need access to a lot more capital the ability to really anchor themselves in mission in terms of corporate structure.
Well, I think the questions are terrific, and so this was a great group. I really had a lot of fun. My closing thought would just be around the ecosystem. So we can all help build that ecosystem together, whether it be as entrepreneurs, whether it be people getting involved and starting funds in different parts of the ecosystem, as well as how we use our money, getting back to something that Joel mentioned, as well as institutions that we're familiar with, how our university endowments. How are they using their money? Our friends who work at foundations, how are those foundations using their money? Pension funds, how are they using their money? So that's something that we can all have an impact in to help build the ecosystem.
We'll probably look back at a time and realize that there was a need to awaken and activate sleeping and distracted capital to be part of the emerging solutions economy. And everybody here is deputized now. Every dollar does matter. As the father of a friend of mine that some people in the room know, is often quoted as having said, money and manure are very similar. If you pile it up, it stinks. If you spread it around, it grows things.
Well, thank you for ending on a humorous note, a very serious subject. But I want to thank again our panel tonight. That was really superb. Joel Solomon and Tim Freundlich and Josh Becker. And we also thank our audience here and on the radio. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club commemorating its 106th year of enlightened discussion is adjourned.